If you're a fan of the Resilient Recruiter podcast, I've got exciting news. I'm hosting a special event for recruitment business owners in London on September 17th and 18th, and I'd love you to join us. If you want to achieve your full potential, you need to surround yourself with the right people. At the Recruitment Coach Live Summit, you'll get to meet some of my podcast guests in person, hang out with us, and share ideas. Some of the folks I've interviewed on the show will either be attending or speaking at the summit. Early bird pricing is still available. Register now by visiting recruitmentcoach.com/summit. Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby. And today is a very special episode for a couple of reasons. Number one, we are filming and recording this in person in Atlanta, Georgia. So that's pretty exciting. Reason number two why this is a special podcast is that my guest today is Sanjay Vyas. Sanjay is my secret weapon when it comes to making the Resilient Recruiter one of the most popular podcasts in the recruiting industry. Today, Sanjay is stepping out from behind the camera to be a guest on the show. You're going to hear his story of starting his first job in recruiting at the age of 16 to working his way up and becoming the managing director of a recruiting firm in Dubai, to then completely changing careers and how that's led Sanjay to become a podcasting and video expert. Most importantly for you, you're going to learn why video is no longer going to be optional when it comes to building a successful brand in the recruitment industry, why it's becoming increasingly essential, and how you can start making that move into video and potentially podcasting to grow your own recruiting firm. Sanjay, this is exciting.
This is super exciting. Thank you for having me.
We've been talking about doing this for a long time.
Forever, yeah. Thank you for having me. I'm definitely a different guest than you normally have, and I don't fit that criteria, but it's great and an honor to be here with you.
Fantastic. So I don't think I've heard this story, so tell me how you got started in recruiting at the tender age of only 16.
Oh, gosh. So I used to work was put to work by my father in his shop, which was the norm back then. So I used to run his little retail sweet shop, if you like, for over the summer holidays and school holidays. And one time I was working at the shop, I would get to the shop at like 6 a.m. I'd close up at like 8 p.m. So it was a long day on my own. And then this one guy would come regularly and buy a pack of cigarettes in the morning. And he would just say, hi, how's your dad? He would chat to me. I didn't know who he was. Anyway, after the summer holidays, my dad came home one day and gave me a business card. And he goes, this guy, Greg, who comes to my shop, wants to offer you a job. And I said, what does he do? And my dad didn't know what he did. He said, he's an accountant, because he had ACA after his initials. So he gave me this business card and he goes, give him a call. And I was like, all right, what have I got to lose? So this is the age of 16. So I've just in the UK, that's the age that you leave high school. So you leave high school at 16, then you go and do 2 years before you go to university. So anyway, so long story short, I went to meet Greg in his office in the city. Still have no idea what this guy does, right? The internet was still in its primitive days. So it wasn't the case of just Googling this guy. Turn up at this office in the city, explains what he does. He says, we do recruitment, et cetera, and you know, come and work here. And the deal at the time was, it was a part-time job, right? So I'd go after college, so I'd have to finish college at 3 or 4 in the afternoon. I'd jump on a train, go into central London, and start working in this recruitment business from like 5 p.m. until like 10 p.m. at night. And all I was doing was admin, right? So this was before, again, email and word processors. So it was all manual paper CVs, paper filing, photocopying, stapling. So that was basically my job. They would give me a bunch of CVs and say, go and file these in the cupboards by surnames. And then they had another job for me, which was kind of after a while where they got me on the phones. So this is kind of my first introduction to getting on the phone and speaking to people. And it was the most mundane and kind of, I dreaded it, right? Because you're calling up people and all you're doing is updating the database, right? Hey, Mark, I've got your CV here. Just want to check. Are you still working with... It was that kind of stuff. So we did that. And I did that for 2 years after college. So I'd go after college. And then it got to a point where I had to make a decision when I was about to go to university. Do I go to university or do I do something else? And having worked 2 years in this environment where I was exposed to recruitment, I was exposed to young people making a lot of money and seeing their success and seeing how they've done it and learning the ropes, I just thought, I probably could do this, right? This is an opportunity. And people here are earning good money. At the time, you're 18 years old, all you're thinking about is making money. Well, that's what I was thinking about, right? For me, it was like, well, if I go to college, I do 3 years of university, I come out of it with a bit of debt, then I got to get a job. I can shortcut all of that and take a job now. So I effectively just said, look, I'm going to skip the uni, which didn't go down well with my family. And I took a job full time in recruitment.
Wow, that's fantastic. So first of all, how was recruitment explained to you when you went for that, you know, initial conversation at age 16?
That's a good point. It was explained to me in the way, in a consulting way, right? It's like, this is what we do. We help. And the industry that they were working was banking and technology. So banking technology and investment banking services. So it was explained to me more like the search model.
Yeah.
Right. Even though they weren't exclusively executive search, but that's how he sold it to me. And that's how he explained it to me, that, you know, companies retain us and they pay us to go out and find and source their staff, the high level positions within these sectors. It was pretty straightforward in terms of what the industry was. But then even simpler was what I had to do, which was just the basic, you know, the admin
side of things. Awesome. So you literally went in at the ground floor and then age 18, like, when did you get your opportunity then to be a recruitment consultant?
So I went in at 18. So during that 2 years of being part-time, I graduated, if you like, from just calling up people to update their CVs to start doing sourcing. Mm-hmm. So recruitment consultants, you know, you'd get there at 5 o'clock. So you'd have a bit of crossover with some of the recruitment consultants. They'd brief you on their jobs that they have. They'd explain some of the requirements that they have. And then my job was to do a database search, right? Just search and then call these candidates up in the evening and just find people that were suitable for these jobs.
And you had to call people in the evening because people didn't have mobile phones.
Right.
So you had to catch them on their home phone in the evening after they're home from work.
Absolutely. And that was the perfect model for them having someone who was working those hours. Because, you know, recruitment consultants generally work late. It's the nature of the business. But no one necessarily always wants to do it. Whereas if that's your shift, you're coming in at 5, you're finishing at 10, then they've got coverage until that time. So yeah, that was the way it was.
That is so cool. And so how did things progress from there then?
So when I got to 18, the job they offered me was as a resourcer, or researcher, I think they call it now, right? So, and it was the first ever resourcer that they hired at this firm. Mm-hmm. So that was my entry into full-time recruitment, was as a resourcer. I spent 2 years as a resourcer and just quickly developed my skills in sourcing and really more understanding the market, because I think when you're working in an industry, I guess any industry, but for me at the time, banking and technology, you know, I felt I needed an edge, right? I felt like I don't know nothing about this industry, right? I had no idea. I remember my first boss telling me, at the interview actually said, what you need to do from now onwards is read the FT, the Financial Times, right? I tried to read the FT, it made no sense to me whatsoever. So I started learning about banking and the investment banking sector and industry, and just from reading CVs, reading job specs, trying to put it all together. And I'm quite a visual person. So I tried to kind of create this kind of organogram and spider diagram, if you like, of what this industry is. So that kind of, those 2 years of doing that really gave me an edge in terms of understanding the market, knowing what is what, and being able to talk to candidates. Not necessarily, as I would never call myself an expert in a field that I've never worked in. However, I felt like I knew a little bit more than others did. Mm. And that gave me the confidence to think, do you know what? I reckon I could be a consultant. I could do what they do. And of course, they were happy to give me the opportunity to do that.
That is awesome. On the terminology, I don't know why in the UK, the term used to be, and I think to some extent still is, resourcer.
Yes.
And in the US, it's either just sourcer, or if you're in an executive search firm, they might call it a researcher, right?
But right.
It's basically the same thing.
It is
the same
thing. You're
finding candidates for the recruiter to interview. And
yeah, I think from my understanding, when I worked in recruitment, resourcer was you were more contingent. And as you said, quite rightly, researcher is you're doing search.
Yeah. Okay. That'll make sense. So then step me through the short version of your recruiting career then from then to when you eventually decide, you know what, this isn't for me.
Yeah, so I went through the ranks very quickly. You know, I was 20 years old, consultant, you know, making really good money. My mates were all still at university and I was looking at what they were doing and I was looking at what I was doing. I was really happy where I was. So I progressed very quickly. I became a manager within that first company I was in. I started managing people. So by the age of 21, I was managing a team of five people.
Wow.
And all of these people were older than me.
Yeah.
So that was quite daunting in a way, because we started building a team of resources and I started leading that team and then also doing kind of some recruiting on the side. To give you the short version, I spent 15 years. So from the age of 16 till just shy of 30, or just about around about 30, 31, working in London in the recruitment sector. So I worked with maybe three or four companies at the time. I stayed at my jobs for a relatively long time because that's just the way that I operate. And I got to a point at that 15 year mark where I was doing really well financially. Things were going well work-wise. I was getting promotions and I was, you know, doing the things that I wanted to do, but I wasn't happy.
Mm.
Right. There was just something inside of me that just, I felt that dread that people, that sun, mm. whatever they called it, Monday
Sunday
blues,
night, Sunday night blues, Sunday night or blues. Yeah.
I felt that dread every single day and I didn't want to go to work. And that's when I decided there was a change was needed. So at that point I thought the change I needed, I blamed my environment being London, right? I grew up in London. I was born in London. But London was London, UK, just a very cold and grey place most of the time.
Yeah.
And I know that I respond better in warmer climates. So I thought, do you know what? Maybe it's the environment. Maybe it's the weather getting me down. I need to get out of London. So I moved to Dubai. And the reason I moved to Dubai was I had family out there and I went out there on holiday once. And as a little test, I just thought, let me just throw my CV to a couple of companies and see what happens. And obviously I had 15 years of recruitment experience. It was easy to get interviews. So I took a job in Dubai as a managing director of a company that was based in London, but they were opening an office up in Dubai.
And Dubai was booming then.
It was booming.
I mean, this was
2007, 2008. So just before the kind of the recession hit, and things, it was flying.
Like,
you know, people were going over, they were throwing money at recruitment. So yeah, it was a booming time to be in that market. So I went out to Dubai. I experienced obviously the big recession there as well and went through that in recruitment. But then after a very short period of time, that dread came back again.
Oh no.
Right.
Okay. It wasn't the weather.
It wasn't the weather, right? So process of elimination is like, right, okay, well, I still feel this dread. And I kind of decided then that the recruitment wasn't for me. And I think if I reflect back on that journey, I think when I was 18, I don't think recruitment was something I really wanted to do, right? As I told you the story, it came about by a complete accident,
which it usually does,
I guess, right? But even when I was doing it and all the money and all the adulation and everything that came with it, I just felt like I wasn't being fulfilled.
Mm.
I just felt something was missing. So I decided that maybe it was time to seek pastures new.
Mm-hmm. All right, fantastic. So then how did you find video and podcasting, which is now your kind of real passion?
Yeah, so that from recruitment to starting the kind of the, or to video and that, it was probably about nearly a 10-year gap. So I worked in fitness for 10 years. So that was kind of my next move after recruitment. And it was actually when I worked in fitness where the idea of creating a podcast came about, because every day when you're working in fitness, you're talking to people, you're coaching people. People are asking questions. Hey, how do I lose weight? Or how do I?
You were a PT.
No, I was a PT. Yeah. Sorry, I was a PT. So you're always giving and coaching knowledge all of the time, and I just thought this is great that people want to know knowledge and want information from me, but how can I deliver this information to more people? Right? Because talking to 1 to 20 in a group exercise class or 1 to 1, of course, is not the most efficient way. So that's when the podcast idea came about. And that seed got planted very early on. But as most things and most people, I did nothing about it. I was just...
I'm the exact same. I had the idea for this podcast in 2017.
Wow.
2017. And I didn't launch until 2019.
Right.
So it took me almost 3 years of, I really want to do a podcast, to actually doing it.
Yeah, it was the same for me. It was about 3 or 4 years before I actually did it. And the reason I thought of podcasts was because I used to commute when living in, we lived in Dubai, then we moved to Abu Dhabi. So I used to have this long commute, an hour and a half each way. So 3 hours in the car every day. And all I did was listen to podcasts, and it was on health, on fitness, on, you know, and I learned so much in that time. And that's what got me interested in podcasts. And then it wasn't actually until we moved back to the UK. And that was the trigger for that was my daughter being born. And we just wanted to be close to the family. And when I got back to the UK, I felt a little bit lost. You know, I'd left the fitness industry, although, you know, I could have obviously gone back to it. And that's kind of where I fell into video and podcast production.
Amazing. All right. That's so let's really dive into that topic. It's one that you obviously know a lot about. So from a business point of view, what do you think are the biggest misconceptions that business owners and specifically recruiting business owners or recruiters have about, you know, video and you know, audio video in general?
That's a good question. I think the first thing that often comes to mind is it's too complicated.
Yeah.
Right. This is really hard to do.
That's definitely the number one objection is right. It seems too complicated.
Yeah. It's overwhelm. And you're the audience you're talking about, you know, recruitment business owners, often they have started as solopreneurs, mm-hmm. and they know all that comes with building a business. And then adding on this piece of video, it just feels like such a big mammoth ask as well. So there's the technical, there's the complication, the understanding, and then cost. I think that's definitely a consideration. And it's not that people can't afford it. It's what's the ROI. They don't understand what is the return on investment of me sitting down and recording videos or even recording a podcast. And I think those two are probably the biggest kind of set or obstacles that people have when it comes to creating video.
I would say there's a third one,
yeah?
Which is, I don't know if you would best describe it as imposter syndrome or just feeling uncomfortable on camera, because most of us, that's not something we're used to or not exposed to. And, you know, you take very confident people. I mean, you have to be confident to do recruiting, right? You're used to talking. They're articulate. They're able to express themselves. But then, you know, looking into a camera, all of a sudden your mind goes blank,
yeah.
right? So, or, and maybe it's actually a separate issue, is the imposter syndrome. It's like, I don't, what do I have to say that other people would be interested in, or what could I share that would be of value? Which of course we know is not the case, but I think we all have that to some extent.
100%.
And I think that's actually the bigger hurdle to get over rather than the technology, the complication, the overwhelm, the cost is the fear of putting yourself out there and exposing yourself potentially, and in our mind, in our inner critical voice, exposing yourself to, you know, embarrassment, ridicule, or just, you know, being putting out something that is not, you know, respected or liked. But what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, very valid point. I think that's, for me, in my experience, that imposter syndrome comes a little bit later, right? So if someone's kind of, I want to do a podcast, they're kind of interested in it, or they want to make YouTube videos, whatever that content creation is. So they have this interest to do it. Then they start pulling on the thread, right? And then they kind of go down this rabbit hole. And then the closer it gets to actually doing it, then suddenly it's like, oh, but actually, like you said, are people actually going to want to listen to me? And I definitely went through that 100%.
So let's circle back to that, because I want to hear how your journey of building that confidence and realizing, actually, this is good and people are getting benefit from this. Before we do that, though, you've assumed that people already have the idea they want to do it.
Right.
Okay. But I suspect a lot of our listeners don't want to do it.
Right.
And so part of my mission from this interview is to convince people who maybe at this stage are listening, thinking like, no way, or I don't want to do video, or I definitely know that would make me uncomfortable, to I'm going to do video, or at least get them closer to that. Maybe it's to the point of being open to considering it and starting to investigate it. But ideally, I want people to leave this session, no matter, maybe they're starting out, I guess we should maybe, there's buckets, different people in different categories. So they're going to be people who are already doing a podcast or creating video for LinkedIn or social media. So there's going to be that portion of our audience, probably the minority, but there will be people in that category. Then there's going to be people who like the idea of it, and they already understand the potential benefits from a brand, from a business point of view, generating inbound leads, creating authority, and so on. But they have those issues of, it seems complicated, I don't know where to start, it's overwhelming, what equipment do I need, all those kinds of questions. But I suspect the two-thirds or at least half haven't even really even entertained the idea of doing video. And I want this episode to give something to each of those categories of listener. Does that sound like a plan?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right. So let's start with the largest group, which is the folks who, like, all very well for you, Sanjay and Mark, you know, seem to be confident doing this, but, you know, video is just not for me. Because we've had clients, Sanjay, I'm thinking of Jody, one of them, who I remember specifically was like, the very first time I did a strategy call with her before she even joined our coaching program, she was like, Mark, just to be clear, I'm never going to do video. It makes me extremely uncomfortable. Do not ask me to do video. That was like a condition of her joining our coaching program, right? And I said, okay, Jody, we're not going to make you do anything. Like, it's your business. You decide which strategies you want to focus on. Right. We're here to help you meet your goals, right? Whatever those are. But I was so proud that after our New York Live Summit, after hearing about you leveraging video for your business and seeing other recruiting firm owners who were doing it, and they were doing a good job and they were getting benefits, business benefits from it, she actually has launched a podcast, which she's won business from her podcast. And then she took the leap of starting to record her podcast, video record, I mean, and then sharing that video on social media. So it was like a complete transformation, which is just amazing. So I want to give people a little taste of that today. So let's talk about, in broad terms, the benefits of why would someone do this for their business?
Yeah, there's several things we can touch on here. I mean, first goes back to something I said earlier about reaching more people, right? Yeah. I think when you're in a situation one-to-one, one-to-many, you know, however many it may be, you are still confined with how many people you can reach your message with. And I feel like when this is also touching on that imposter syndrome, right? So for me, the confidence came from talking to people on a one-to-one basis or a one-to-small group basis and seeing in real life the feedback and the response and the, oh yeah, this is working, and people actually wanting to be receptive to this. And I feel like recruiters are in the same similar situation, right? They work with their candidates, you know, in a one-to-one setting, they work with their clients, and they get results. And they see that the advice or the information, knowledge that they have is working and people are responsive to it. So I think that first and foremost should give you that confidence that if you can impact one person or a few people in real life and in a in-person setting, then you absolutely can do it online, right? There really isn't much difference in that. And I feel like that's one of the huge benefits, is just getting that reach and getting your message out to more people. That's definitely one of the hugest benefits.
That is such an important point, absolutely, is thinking about reaching more people. And if you can give value one-to-one, then that same benefit, because every day our clients are giving advice to clients, to candidates, helping people with their careers, helping clients to attract and retain top talent. And their clients are appreciative and are valuing that information. Why not share that with a much wider audience?
Right.
And I might even go one step further of saying, I think everybody can understand the benefit of reaching a wider audience, gaining greater exposure, building a following of people who know, like, and trust you and perceive you as being credible and someone they can relate to, someone who they like and they trust and respect. I might even argue that you have almost a duty to try and help more people, right? Why wouldn't you, if you have knowledge that could help people, why wouldn't you want to you know, help as many people as you possibly can, you know, not only is that going to benefit your business, but there's going to be people who you will never know even the impact that you could potentially have. People listening to your podcast or looking at your content on LinkedIn, and they never engage, they don't give it a like, or they don't necessarily comment, but that has improved their business, their career in some way, and they appreciate you, and even though you've never met them. To me, that's like insane that you can have that.
That's gold. I think impact. You said something really important there, that person that you're never going to know how much you've impacted them. And I had an experience of this when I worked in as a group exercise instructor. You know, this lady came up to me once after a class, and she'd come to all of my classes, just one that creeps in at the back, goes in the corner, doesn't say anything, and just gets on with it. And many, many months later, she came back to me and said, first time she ever spoke to me, she goes, "Just wanted to let you know that I really enjoy your classes. And I listen to everything, because during the cool down, I would give like, hey, make sure you drink water, make sure you eat this today or whatever." She goes, "I listen to everything that you've said at the end of your classes, and it's just completely changed my health." And when that, then let's call this person Mary. There's a million Marys out there, yeah. Right? And I think you're absolutely right. Having that impact on those people is significant, right? It's just hearing those stories, and even if it's just that one person, I think it's worth it, right? You've put the time and effort in, and linking it back to recruitment, I think the way I looked at recruitment, one of the frustrations of recruitment, we're not here to talk about the recruitment industry, but one of my frustrations of recruitment, I've heard you talk about it a lot on your podcast, is you're often working for free. Right.
Right.
You're doing all of that work. And this is mainly contingent recruitment. Research is slightly different. But when I worked in contingency, you know, so many times deals didn't happen.
Yeah.
But I spent weeks and months and, you know, blood, sweat and tears on getting the deal to that point. And I got nothing for it. Right. So the way I look at podcasts or content creation is that at least for that effort that you're putting in, you will get some kind of reward, right? Even if it's just, hey, I really like that, what you said, or hey, you impacted me, or even potentially business. Hey, you know, I want you to come and help me and recruit. And we know from your podcast and your guests that come on, how many have had the ROI of getting business from their podcasts. And yeah, it can just be a complete door opener and a massive pivot in your business development strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been surprised by how much impact the podcast has had in terms of generating goodwill. And it's like, I've 20 plus years in business. I've tried lots of different strategies, different ways of working, different marketing ideas. And the podcast has been by far the biggest, most successful thing that I have ever, ever done. And just the momentum that builds, if you're consistent and you keep it up, that's the thing. Like, it doesn't, if you do it sporadically or you release a few videos and then stop, then it's not going to move the needle, but we can come on to that. So building an audience, what other benefits could our listeners gain by putting themselves out there in some way, shape or form? It doesn't have to be a podcast, because that is a commitment, right? There's no way around it. There's a commitment to do something like this consistently. But even if it's just creating more content, whatever form that takes, ideally video, but creating content consistently, publishing on social media, what other benefits do you think that brings?
So I like what you said about it doesn't have to be a podcast, because I think you're right. It could be a post, it could be a LinkedIn post, it could be a text post, it could be a photo, it could be anything. So I think becoming an authority in your space, right? As recruiters who, and something else that you know, espouse a lot is building a niche market, right? And how can you, again, reach more people to for them to know you are the go-to person in that niche market, right? If you are not out there and not putting podcasts or posts or on LinkedIn, and you're sitting in your office, you're trying to build this speciality, and you're the person that recruits, you know, carpenters that make these round tables out of oak only, right? No one's going to know that you are, and you may have had decades of experience in doing this one craft, right? But the only people that are going to know, it's word of mouth, right? So I feel like you have this understanding this knowledge and this understanding. And I think when you put yourself out there, no matter, look, you're always going to get people, you're going to have people that like you and the people that don't like you, right? Yeah. But at the end of the day, the only way that people are going to understand that this is what you do and respect you as an authority is if they can see that this is what you are doing and living and breathing. Mm-hmm. And I kind of link this back. There's a lot of analogies between fitness and recruitment, but right, you know, it's the same in fitness. And the way I look at it is like, you're almost in fitness, I'll say leading by example, right? If you're a PT and you're trying to get other people to do the things that you're asking them to do or follow your guidance, if you're not doing it yourself, then they're not going to listen to you, right? Whereas people are seeing you talk about this stuff, doing it as a recruiter, you're out there, you're coaching and you're talking about, you know, interview tips or the market or whatever's happening in the industry. They are seeing, oh, this person has their pulse, their finger on the pulse, right? They know what's going on. If I want to know what's happening, I'm going to go to that guy.
Right, right. It's like people, you can tell people that you're good at what you do, right? But when you share content, you're demonstrating.
Show me.
Exactly. It's so much more powerful. Yeah. And I loved what you said about the idea of, you know, becoming that go-to recruiter. My friend Robert said that your sales have a direct relationship to how many people know who you are and what you do. And if the only people who know you are the clients and candidates that you've directly helped and interacted with, then it's like you could be really good at what you do, but you're the best kept secret that nobody knows about. And you sure, you can make a good living, you know, working that way, referrals, word of mouth. But I think most people listening to this podcast don't want to just make a living, right? They want to be as successful as they possibly can. Right. So this is a vehicle for doing that. So, okay, let's move on to the next category. Let's assume people are convinced now, like, okay, I'm interested. I definitely want to pursue this. I want to maybe explore video. Then you've got the hurdles that you mentioned earlier of, man, but it just seems so complicated. It seems like I'm going to have to buy lots of like thousands of pounds or dollars worth of expensive equipment. I don't like, where would you direct people? Like, where should they start?
When it comes to, let's talk about the tech first. That's probably the biggest overwhelm is tech and understanding what to do, right? Something you talk about all the time when it comes to recruitment processes and recruitment bits of the recruitment machine is outsourcing, right? So if you're already doing that in some capacity in your business, even, you know, whether you've got a VA or whether you're using a piece of software and you've got some accounting software, that's you outsourcing, right? So it's the same thing here. You don't have to do it all. And I feel like when you're an entrepreneur, solopreneur, that's the mindset we have almost, that we have to do it all off almost. So I think that's the first thing. You can outsource this. And it doesn't
have people who can help.
There are people out there, just like you're an expert in what you do. There are millions of people out there who are experts in this field. And again, just like when you're shopping for anything, you can shop in the cheaper end of the market and you can go in the luxury end of the market. So I feel like we're sitting here in 2024 where kind of video and social media, and it's kind of at its, you know, it's never been, well, of course it's never been bigger, it's such a fundamental part of business and life. So I think that's one of the, it's definitely something that people should be thinking about.
So you're saying an easy on-ramp is outsource.
Yeah. If it's really that overwhelming, yeah, then, and you, outsourcing if you really don't want anything to do with it at all, and you just think, I like the idea of it, but hey, that really just freaks me out, then outsource, right?
And that was my route into this, because I was that person that wanted to start a podcast, but felt overwhelmed. And that's why it took me two, three years before I actually did it. And the way that I got over that was I worked with a podcast agency, Kerry Green, Podcast Fast Track. I'll give him a shout out because he was great at coaching me through the fundamentals and helped me get started. He produced my first 10 or 12 episodes, and that got me, and you know, produced a minimum viable product that was good. Helped me, like, what was the minimum equipment that you need? Of course, you know, a good mic is like number one probably. And then from there, that gave me, I was up and running, and then we were able to take it in house from there.
Right. And again, another great fitness analogy here, right? That's no different to someone hiring a personal trainer.
Right.
Right.
Yeah,
I've had this so many times in my career as a trainer where someone wants to get fit, They want to lose weight. They want to get stronger. They want to run a marathon, whatever it is. And they just, I don't know how to do this. Overwhelmed. Yeah. Go and get a PT. You get a PT, you work with them for a period of time, and then you kind of know what to do, right? And I've had so many, and for me as a PT, I always used to say to my clients, my job is done the moment you say to me, Sanjay, I don't need you anymore, right? Because I've got this, I can do this on my own. That makes me, that's the best feeling I get, is when I feel like you are competent enough and you're able to go off out there in the world and do this for yourself. And that's exactly what you've done with podcasting. So that's a really good example.
Fantastic. Let's maybe offer, we're not going to go into the nitty-gritty of equipment today. Maybe let's offer people a resource. So if you go to, I'm making this up on the spot, recruitmentcoach.com/AV. Okay. And, we'll have a downloadable document with Sanjay's kind of equipment, shopping list of like basic, you know, must need, and then more expensive options as well. How does that sound?
For sure. Yeah.
Okay. Fantastic. So, what else can help someone to get started on this journey?
So one of the things you touched on this earlier is you mentioned about the consistency, right? And you mentioned people kind of, you know, in order to get that success, there has to be a level of consistency there. And yeah, I think that overwhelm can come with how much you've got to do and how often you've got to do it. And again, this comes back down to, and you know, you're a big fan of James Clear and Atomic Habits. And so am I. And, you know, I always go back to what he talks about in that book in terms of starting small, right? You know, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to hire a studio like we're in now. I mean, I'm assuming this is the first time you've been in a podcast studio for your podcast. Second time. Okay. Yeah. So, and you've been doing your podcast for some time.
Yeah.
You don't have to go all out, right? You just need to start small. Just like, again, I'll go back to fitness. You know, that might be going for a walk, right? If you want to go running, the first step is walk, right? Go for a walk every
exactly.
day. Exactly. So in the content creation space, that might be just doing, you know, one text post a week, or, you know, one podcast a month, if it might be that, right? Starting small and just building it into your current routine. And rather than thinking I have to carve out a whole new, you know, schedule in my calendar for this thing, try and fit it in, but make it consistent, right? Because if you can be consistent, no matter how small it is, and we know this from the compound effect and things like this, those small steps are gonna build up.
I'm really glad you said that. 100%. Just start small, but start, that's the thing.
Be consistent, right?
Yeah.
It's the same thing. How many people go to the sign up for gyms in January? And by February, they're gone, right? Are they getting the results that they want? No, because they've stopped.
Right.
They've stopped going.
What I want our listeners to think about is, are you the person who joins the gym in January and then like by March, you're not going anymore? Or are you the person that is just going to start and keep going and learn as you go and get better and better? That's what it takes to, you know, be successful with video, with podcasting. In terms of combining these two things of start small and what equipment you need, you can take amazing video on your phone these days, right? So you don't need to go out and buy a $2,000 a pound camera.
I'm so glad you said that, Mark, because we are living in a time where we are all carrying a high level production studio in our pockets, right? The mobile phone now and the cameras on these phones and the audio on these phones are so good. You literally don't need anything else, right? And I think that is a very good point. You already have the things. I've done a video on this, actually. You already have the things that you need to start a podcast. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the biggest myth that people feel, is that you need to go out and spend money straight off the bat, and you don't.
And so really, there's no excuse, right?
No, there isn't.
It's like never been easier to create content, to share videos, to put your knowledge out there into the world, to bring value to more people. And to the benefit that we didn't touch on earlier that slipped my mind is generating inbound leads, clients and candidates who are pre-sold on working with you. And that's really the prize that we're going after. That's like, you know, the nirvana, right? That's right. What everyone wants. Rather than you having to chase and cold call constantly, the grind, the hustle, is when people start coming to you first. You're the first person they think of when they are looking for a new job or when they are building their team. So no excuses, guys. You know, you've got everything you need in your pocket. So finally, let's give a few insights for the more advanced listeners who already have a podcast, already putting video out there on LinkedIn. What encouragement or insights would you share with them?
So if you're already creating content, let's talk about podcasts. If you're already creating podcasts, that's fantastic. And I think the next evolution from that is, what are you doing with that piece of content, right? Because you've put a lot of time, effort, energy, money into creating this piece of content. Let's say it's an hour long episode. You could just put out there as an episode and that's great. But then how are you repurposing that? And I think that's what the more kind of advanced, even if you're new, but if the more advanced person should be looking at, how can I maximize this piece of content, right? Cutting that into clips, turning it into audiograms, or turning the transcript into text posts. And, the technology is there, AI is there. There's so many different tools that we can use to help us to do that. And then you kind of build this content strategy around it, right? Because I think when people think about posting content on a regular basis, it's like, I got to think about what I got to write and what do I talk about? What can I post today? If you've got a conversation that's an hour long, you've got 60, in theory, you've got 61 minute clips, right? That wouldn't work out that way. But you've got so many nuggets you can take from that episode. And I'm still putting out clips on my wife's channel that from podcasts that were recorded years ago, right? Because the content's still relevant. So it gives you this bank, this library of resources that is so valuable that you can always just dip into. And I think if you're kind of more on the advanced level, look back at your old content, right? You might be able to kind of revisit that. And I know a lot of bigger podcasts now, what they're doing is that they're just re-releasing old episodes. Because like I said, the content's still relevant.
So, I saw that Tim Ferriss recently put out a bunch of resurfaced old popular episodes.
Yeah, Rich Roll does it. Rangan Chatterjee does it. Tim Ferriss does it. So many of these podcasts go back and resurface old episodes. So I think that's definitely one thing for the more advanced one. The second thing is, not, you may be a podcaster, but a lot of podcasts, of course, is an audio first medium, right? Mm-hmm. However, that's changing. So you may be a podcaster and you may have been doing audio for a long time. I think if you're at that level, now is definitely the time to think about switching that video camera on.
Yeah, definitely. So switching the video camera on, like today, if you're already producing a podcast, let's turn it into a video podcast. Right. Even if the quality is not brilliant to begin with, which mine definitely wasn't until I met you. But it's better than nothing. I can't tell you, Sanjay, how many people have found, and I've put zero effort into building my YouTube channel because I've been focused on other things, but we just uploaded consistently over time, putting content up there. And we've got a lot of clients from it who, even though I think the quality of the video wasn't brilliant, people still found it, appreciated it, liked it, and reached out and are now clients.
People want to see you, right? You may be this authority in this space, but I feel like trust comes more when you visually, right? I feel like you can listen all day long to audio, but when you see this person, you see them interacting with someone else on camera and you see the engagement, I think that builds trust quicker than anything else.
Absolutely. I feel like video is it sounds silly in a way, but if you want to become quote unquote famous in your industry, video is the key to making that happen, because when people have seen you on video, it does create a sort of celebrity feel almost. It sounds silly, but it really does. The video is so powerful that way at building that connection and especially the more people see you over time consistently, they see you and hear you. The trust just really accelerates for sure.
100%.
So Sanjay, you and I are talking about providing media services to the recruitment industry. And we're starting to do that initially for our own clients. So if our listeners want to go on this journey, but they want help, then feel free to reach out to us. Find Sanjay on LinkedIn, Sanjay Vyas, V-Y-A-S. And of course, reach out to us through the website, recruitmentcoach.com/podcast. And we'd be happy to, handhold you through that process. But Sanjay, I feel like we've scratched the surface. We'll need to come back and do a part two.
For sure. And if anyone wants to reach out to me on LinkedIn, even if you're undecided, you mentioned that person who's unsure and you just want to have a little chat, let us know, and we'll definitely
In fact, Sanjay, you've got a community that you're building on LinkedIn. Can you mention that?
Yeah, thank you for that. So yes, we have a community called Behind the Mic, and my wife and I set that up. And the idea behind the mic was to, just as I said, reach more people, just help people demystify this world, which personally I don't find complicated. Of course, I love doing it and that's what I do, but I'm really passionate about this. And I feel like if I can help even that a small group of people kind of break down those barriers and create more content, then that's going to make me feel, yeah, so that's the good that I'm doing in the world. So Behind the Mic, it's a LinkedIn newsletter. And then we have a community on Circle, which is completely free to join. You'll join like-minded professionals, other podcasters at all different levels and all parts of their journey, hearing from them, learning from them. And more importantly, just hearing, oh, he feels that way as well. Oh, he's had that problem as well. And I think that's so powerful when you have that community. So yeah, Behind the Mic on LinkedIn and Circle.
Wait, how did they find you on Circle? What's the...
So if you go onto the Behind the Mic newsletter on LinkedIn, you'll find all the links and everything via that newsletter.
And we'll put it in the show notes as well.
Absolutely, thank you.
All right, Sanjay, let's do this again. It was fun, but thanks for doing this.
Great being here, Mark. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks, Sanjay.
Thanks for watching. If you enjoyed this conversation, check out some of my other episodes. You'll see one or two suggested episodes on the screen now.